Hello, fellow youths. I'm Kathy.
I'm Audrey.
I am Nicole.
And hooray.
Hooray for us.
Hooray for names.
And we're here to talk to you today about Ember in the Ashes by Saba Tahir. We have for you the quick introduction to the book, which is exactly what is written on the inside cover. So I'm just going to go into my dramatic reading mode here. Leia is a slave. Elias is a soldier. Neither is free. Under the Martial Empire, defiance is met with death. Those who do not vow their blood and bodies to the Emperor risk the execution of their loved ones and the destruction of all they hold dear. It is a brutal world inspired by ancient Rome that Leia lives with her grandparents and older brother. The family ekes out an existence in the Empire's impoverished backstreets. They do not challenge the Empire. They've seen what happens to those who do. But when Leia's brother is arrested for treason, Leia is forced to make a decision. In exchange for help from rebels who promise to rescue her brother, she will risk her life to spy for them within the Empire's greatest military academy. There, Leia meets Elias, the school's finest soldier and secretly its most unwilling. Elias only wants to be free of the tyranny he's being trained to enforce. He and Leia will soon realize that their destinies are intertwined and that their choices will change the fate of the Empire itself. Dun dun dun.
Dun dun dun.
Okay. So I guess we're just going to start off by discussing...
Do we want to do cast of characters first? So the first character is probably Leia.
You say it with confidence.
I say all things with confidence. Who is a scholar in this society. And in the book, scholars are kind of like an underclass. They're either free but not allowed to learn how to read or like slaves.
So servants or slaves.
So
basically.
Not doing great. And she, what do we want to tell people about Leia?
She's a free spirit. She wishes she was as brave as her mother. But the one thing the author really wants you to know about her is that she's hot as fuck.
Also, her one true motivation in life is finding her brother, Darren.
Yeah.
Because she's busy beating herself up about being a coward. And she can't stop being a coward until she's found Darren.
She has to redeem herself.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh, yeah. It's a redemption story.
Elias?
Yep. Elias is the next one on my list.
Man,
he's also
Elias.
Hot as fuck. That's something you should know.
Well, they're the two main characters.
Yeah.
So
he's hot as fuck. He's stuck in this world where he doesn't want to be, you know, this horrible weapon carved from the Empire's own evilness or whatever. And he's like, no, man, I just want to like look at kitten pictures.
He's a big soft gummy bear on the inside.
And be free.
Also wants to redeem the bad deeds that he's done in the past as a mask in training.
Yep.
Wants to take care of everybody.
Just wants to love you.
Just wants to love you. Spends a lot of time picking Leia up and carrying her out of trouble.
Yeah. Which leads us to Helaine, which is his best friend, also a weapon carved by the Empire. And she is tall, blonde, essentially like a Sports Illustrated model kind of thing. But she has like this moral code. And we'll get into her more. But she's just kind of like unbreakable in her loyalty and just like it goes both ways. Loyalty to the Empire and loyalty to Elias.
She is also secretly in love with her best friend.
Not
the plot
super
thickens.
Secretly.
Just going to say, if you have like more life experience than a teenager, it's not super secret. But if you're a teenager who like doesn't, if you're like Elias, who's blind to the fact that she's a woman.
He spends a lot of the book very confused about his feelings and whether or not they're like coming from his penis or not. He's like, I can't tell if I love her, if I just want to like be on her. I don't know.
And then we have their two... enemies, Marcus and Zach, who are competing in the same sort of like set of competition to become the next emperor as they are. And they are twins.
Best bro twins forever for life. Heart, heart, heart.
Though there is a bit where Zach opens up about wanting to be away
free
from
of him. Marcus.
Yes. And then he's a deep, deep pond.
And then I guess to round out the evil people, there's the Commandant, which is, surprise, Elias's mother. But she's like this... I've described her before as Heidi Klum mixed with Professor Umbridge because she's just like this hard ass and very kind of sadistic and evil, but she's also supposed to be kind of like this like ice queen thing where she's just, you don't think of her as a woman, but she's still beautiful. Because, I mean, she led to super hot Elias, so she has to be.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
And then we have a few more good people characters, including Kenan, who is... There has to be a love interest on Leia's side that is not Elias, because that's also how teen books work, right?
We need a love triangle.
Have to make it confusing.
Yep.
Yeah, and he's a ginger resistance fighter. Yep. He's also attractive.
Like trees?
Cedar and yeah. rain, I think, is what it was.
Sure, because he spends lots
Don't
of time
know why I remember
outdoors.
We all know
smells
why
are Audrey's
that.
Thing. Audrey likes smells.
Super on top of smells.
Yep. And then we also have her two, kind of when she becomes a slave, her two friends, Izzy yes. and the cook, and they are slaves with her, and they help her through stuff, which is kind of great. And then there's the augers, who are I refer to as the albino mafia, because they are people without any skin pigmentation and red eyes, despite the red eyes being what's normally the whites of the eyes and not, you know, the iris parts. So they're an interesting group.
They can tell the future, and they're like a religious sect for the...
They're like revered like the church almost?
Yeah. It's like if there were 13 popes.
Yeah. That's a very good description.
Yeah, they cannot
and
die.
That's the augers.
And could read your mind, so it's the
yeah,
most
and
terrifying
tell the future.
Possible.
Yep.
Moving from there, we're going to discuss why you should read this book if the cast of characters isn't enough to get you into it. And I'm just going to start off by saying that it has a map on both the inside cover and the back cover. And when you have two maps, you know it's going to be a good book.
I won't lie to you. I almost said that as my reason.
They paid someone. So they went out to someone and they're like, we need you to read this book and make a map of it. So, like, you know it's going to be good.
I would say that if you like fast-paced action, this is a good book to read because, like, holy crap, you would never really get a great breathing break. I actually read this book in one night. Just went right through it because it was, like, it was so easy to read.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, it's not necessarily always easy to read because it's, like, surprise attempted rape kind of in the first chapter.
Yeah.
But it's, like, you need to know what happens next.
Yeah.
So it's easy to continue.
Like, gripped by the events of the book.
And then Nicole recommended this book to us, so she has all the pressure to explain to you why you should read it.
I recommended it because it's the book that I've liked the most recently, but but the reason that I think people should read it is because it deals with really harsh shit, and I feel like this year especially, I want everybody dealing with really harsh shit. So, I mean, you know, it's also a very, very good book to read, and it's not harsh in the way that, like, you're going to want to kill yourself afterwards, but it deals with harsh stuff, and it does it in a way where, like, you're kind of hopeful at the end.
Yeah.
There's bits of hope.
Yeah.
In a world that's pretty much full of garbage. It's pretty much entirely garbage. So
yeah,
in the end, it's a message of hope, not a message of shit.
It definitely deals with some, like, hard things, but it, like, makes you think about them more than, like, feel depressed by them.
Yes. Yeah.
And you don't have to live in this world, which is getting kind of rough right now. So, you know.
Yeah. It makes you realize it could always be worse, kind of.
Let's move on to the first, I guess, area of discussion, since we kind of got into her a lot with at the beginning when we were going through, but Helaine.
So I want to talk about Helaine, because the more I read the book, the more I was like, I think Helaine might be, like, the strongest character in the entire book. And that's because I know that Elias is, like, the super sweet bleeding heart, and he wants to save everybody. And that's cool. I guess that Elias is probably the main character because that perspective works really well for, like, the world we live in now, where, like, every single life is a special snowflake and it matters, and, like, there's a way to save everybody, and he truly believes that there's, like, a right way to get out of every situation. And Helaine kind of, like, doesn't even have the time anymore to be that naive. And there's a part that I really want to read in the book, if I can reach it. So Helaine starts talking to him. They're talking about the battle. Elias is taking it all on himself, and he's like, I could have done something. I could have stopped it. They should have just killed me. And Helaine's like, that's bullshit. In this world, like, you can't do that. You can't just give up. You have to fight. And so she gives this pretty awesome pep talk. So let's see. Oh, the first to talk is Elias. The battle will end when you defeat or are defeated by the leader of the enemy. If I'd been willing to die first, Tristis would still be alive. Leander, Demetrius, all of them, Helaine. Zack knew it. He begged Marcus to kill him. I should have done the same, and you'd be named Empress. Helaine, of the Augur, or the Augurs would name Marcus, and I'd be his slave. This is Elias. We told our men to kill. Why doesn't she understand? Why isn't she willing to face it? We gave the order. We followed it ourselves. It's unforgivable. And Helaine, this is the paragraph that I like, what did you think was going to happen? Helaine pushes herself to her feet, and I stand too. Did you think the trials would get easier? Didn't you know this would come? They've made us live our deepest fears. They've thrown us at the mercy of creatures that shouldn't exist. Then they turned us against each other, strength of arms and mind and heart. And you're surprised? You're naive is what you are. You're a fool. So she starts screaming at him, and I'm pretty into it. And a fetish was born. Yeah, I'm pretty into Helaine after this. His next sentence starts with, hell, you don't know what you're saying. So I just skip past all that fuckery and whatever he's saying next, because I'm sure she's fully aware of what she's saying. And basically, she just goes on to say that the trials are bigger than themselves and that somebody has to think about the 40 million people that, like, have to be led by an emperor. Mm-hmm. And you can't just quit and give up and go be, like, a whiny baby out in the desert. You have to, like, take care of these 40 million people. There's a part where she says, who will control the destiny of 40 million souls? So it makes me realize that, like, Helene's misguided, sure, and she treats the scholars like garbage, and there's definitely a part in the book where she talks about them as garbage, but she's got her own moral purpose behind this. And I also feel like just to get where she is, she's probably 10 times the man that Elias is. Because what's that saying? A man and a woman can work equally as hard and a man will go 3 times as far. I bet in this world that's like 10 times as true. Because there's only one lady picked for Blackcliff School. In, like, how many decades?
Per generation.
Per generation. And the last one. Sorry, go ahead, Kathy.
To be fair, it's because the, you know, albino mafia knew all of this was going to happen in a weird turn of events.
They got all still, these funny, fuzzy prophecies they don't want to share with anybody. But, so Helene is the only lady. So all I can think about is, like, what must that, like, be like? That is, like, she's in this, not only is the world, like, physically designed to, like, murder you, because that's all they're trying to do since they're kids, but it's also socially against you. Like, you don't have a single lady to talk to. If you're on your period, you're fucked. If you need a tampon, you are in so much trouble. I bet they don't even know what tampons are at Blackcliff School.
Oh my God. Imagine if her family hadn't explained to her what a period was before she went. Because she left when they were, like, what, 8? Isn't that when they start?
Like 5.
Yeah, they're, like, really, like, you're not.
So probably not.
Oh my God. I guess they go home for the summers, but Jesus Christ.
Can you imagine what Helene's first period was like? It's already such an awkward experience, but you're like, oh, yeah, there's no one to tell me anything about this shit.
Nope.
I spent a lot of time thinking about periods, I guess.
Okay.
Probably this will probably come up more.
It was probably when she was done, like, doing that thing where they, like, kind of drop them off in the wild and are like, come back in 5 years.
Oh, yeah,
it was probably during then, which means Elias was the only person with her
to talk to.
Oh, I'm imagining him, like, trying to explain how a pad works. So you put...
Why would he know?
Why would he know?
Why are you bleeding?
I just imagine it kind of like an awkward dad situation. Like, dads don't really know what they're doing either. Single dads just like, you put... And then
I feel
stuck
like it's
to my hand.
An awkward brother situation.
I also kind of feel like this is the first time that problem has probably ever happened at Blackcliff, because I can just imagine the commandant, like, her period started and she was like, no. And then it stopped.
she rejected the concept of periods.
She was like, no, this is not going to happen. And it just stopped because that's how it works. That or she probably carved her own uterus out after Elias was born, because I could probably see her doing that too.
Yeah. I feel like she'd be the kind of person who'd be into self-mutilation.
She's got those big old tattoos on her.
Those are, yes, that's one of the mysteries that I want solved.
Yeah.
That's one,
like,
of
what
my
all
mysteries.
The tattoos are for. But on the subject of Helene, I got more interested in her after I actually read, like, the very end, which is, like, the author's acknowledgments, and she talks about, like, how for her kids she wants them to have, like, Leia's courage or something or whatever, and Elias's blah blah blah, and then she's like, and I want them to be as, like, loving as Helene. And I was like, what the fuck are you talking about, lady? And then I thought about it and I realized that, like, Helene sacrifices so much for Elias during the course of this book. Like, so much.
That's the thing. Like, she, like, denigrates the slaves during all this, but at the end of the book, it's her becoming a slave in order to save Elias. And that's essentially what happens when you lead into the next book, is Helene ends up being the slave. Also, side note, I was in an emotional pre-period place when I read the acknowledgments, and I started crying at the author's acknowledgments. Not anything in the book, but the author's acknowledgments. When she's talking about her family, I was like, oh my God, she's such a loving person. I'm so happy for her.
So beautiful.
Too many feels.
I mean, it's also worth acknowledging that, like, Helene is brought up in this martial society, so she's, like, brought up from birth thinking that these people are lesser than her.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, like, one of those things where it's, like, it's a... like, part of who you are is a product of what you're brought up in.
Check your privilege.
So, like, it would be really surprising if she was, like, as sensitive to these issues as Elias was.
Sensitive is a good word for him. Sensitive.
He's just got a lot of feelings.
He does have a lot of feelings.
He goes home. He listens to The Cure.
Oh, God. Because it's also worth mentioning, Elias, unlike most of the people of Blackcliff, is brought up by, like, the tribesmen, which are not martial. He has, like, this outside perspective looking in. So I think that's part of where all the feelings come from. Whereas, like, Helene is from, like, a noble family. So she's been raised her entire life with slaves. You know, I'm not saying it's okay. I'm just saying, like, she's very much, like, a product of her society.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's also, like, and she kind of rises above it, or is like the best example of it in a lot of ways.
We also briefly see her sisters at one point. Like,
they're bigger. they're in the second book more, and we won't talk about that.
Okay, well, then I guess maybe I should talk about this since I am the spoiler-free person. Mm-hmm. But we see the sisters briefly, and we just are basically told that they're like, you know, man-eaters, that they're terrible, and that so it's even more interesting to see from this like point of view, especially when they say that they really don't like the fact that Elaine is in this whole world. And
well, I think from what I've gathered from like part of this is reading the second book, but you could probably read between the lines and notice it, is that like ladies in this society are there to get married and make advantageous matches for their family. So like Helene's existence in Blackcliff is like kind of unusual. I think it's like only a point of pride for her family because there's only one chosen every generation. So other things to think about when you're thinking about what a badass she is.
And now she gets to give up her name and become the Bloodshrike, which will be extremely apt once a month.
And we've circled back to periods. I'm pretty pleased with that.
How often can we do? Maybe we should just throw this out and do a period podcast.
That would be.
It'll be fine. Periods and teen literature. It'll be great. But yeah. And then I know since we have, I guess, Helaine, who's the upright moral backbone in a way of this book, even if it maybe of the society of the Marshalls, even if it's not necessarily good from our point of view, it's still the moral backbone. Then we have this moral ambiguity that you wanted to talk about, Audrey.
Yeah. So one of the characters I wanted to talk about with this in particular is Zach, who's Marcus's brother. And Marcus kind of starts out as like this very just like black and white. He's like a bad dude. And what becomes clear throughout the first couple of chapters is like Zach has this little crush on Helaine, and it's like kind of weird because you're like, God, because he's like gross because he's Marcus's brother. But as the trials go on, there were some really interesting character moments with Zach. One of them was where he's talking to Elias after the second trial, I think, and he's like, Elias is like, how could you help Marcus, blah, blah, blah. And Zach's like, do you know how close I was to being free when we graduated? And then I got swept into this, like, trial bullshit. And for me, that was really interesting because it lent, like, this air of like there's more to Zach than just like he's this gross toad character. Like they nickname Marcus is the snake and Zach is the toad. Like he's kind of like been holding Marcus back all this time. In a way, like I think he is the person who like makes Marcus like not be the full level horrible that he could be.
He's his weakness. He's like his softness.
Yeah,
He's nice to Zach and pretty much nobody else.
Mm-hmm. And then
he keeps Marcus from raping all the time. So there's some downtime.
Probably not even that.
He's probably not even that.
He's like just a watered down Marcus.
But I think it's interesting to think about too in terms of like, so Zach has this like awareness that like the thing he's doing is terrible and he wanted to get out of it just like Elias does. And when that moment happened, I had this reaction where I started thinking about Elias and all the times that he probably also walked away from people that were being raped. Because, like, in this society, if you stop someone from raping a scholar, like, you are, like, it's like a sign of weakness and it's a sign that you're turning against the martial, like, rule, so they will kill you. So it's also important to, like, acknowledge, I think, that, like, there's a reason Elias has all these feelings. And it's probably because he has like talked about doing all these terrible things. But I think it's like Zach made me think about how if you looked at Elias from like an outside view, he would look just as bad as Zach.
I mean, he did cheer that kid getting whipped to death. So, you know.
Yeah. Yep. He felt bad about it, but he did it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then the other thing that Zach I find interesting about him is like she makes this character who is like five lines do a lot of work, actually. Mm-hmm. So, like, in the third trial, when Elias kills all of his friends, Marcus kills his brother Zach, which is like a huge thing. It's like the one moment where you see Marcus like looking lost and like having signs of weakness. And then this really interesting thing happens with Marcus's character where
he turns feral,
but there's also like he becomes like this shadow of Zach hangs over him, and it, like, tempers him in a way that is surprising.
Mm-hmm. It's mentioned a few times that he looks over his shoulder expecting to see Zach, which is,
yeah,
I guess, heartbreaking if he wasn't a sociopathic fucking sadistic bastard.
I think the worst I've ever felt for Marcus was when he was talking about killing Zach, and he said that his that Zach's first word was his name, and it was his last word, too, that he said his name as he was killing him. And I was like, oh, that's harsh, man. Yeah. I was like, that's, I mean, like, I wish that on nobody. You suck, because, like, Marcus fucking sucks. He's terrible. Yeah. But there's, like, that 1 second where I was like, okay, I feel a little bad for you.
Well, this shows how terrible of a person I am, because I cackled when I read that. No. I was just like, hey, you get what you deserve.
Yeah. Well, I think he's interesting, though. They're both interesting because, like, once Marcus kills Zach, he becomes, like, much more humanized because there's, like, this weakness element of him. And it's something that I think Sabaa Tahir does really well in her book, is that her villains are, like, fully rounded characters, not mm-hmm. just like black and white villains. Like, they're definitely villains that are easy to hate, yeah. but there's a lot of complex emotions going on there.
They've often got motivation, and usually they've shown like a range of feelings, even yeah. if like the Commandant had like that one feeling once and she really hated it. And she's like, God, that fucking feeling, that time I had that feeling. That was the worst day of my life. But like, they do have feelings and they do things that are like unexpected.
Yeah.
So, and I also feel like they're all, in the end, you forget, they're all victims of the world anyway. They're all like, Marcus brings his own sadism to it. Like, he was always going to be a little bit of a troublemaker, mm-hmm. but like, they're all victims of the society that's made them this way.
And it's interesting yeah. because Marcus and Zach are also not noble born.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a huge thing, is at the end of the book, Marcus ends up being crowned emperor. And one of the things that Elias's grandfather, who's like, you know, the old school, very old money kind of person, is just like, ugh, why do you have to be so lowborn?
Fucking plebes.
Yeah, fucking
it's
plebes.
It's funny. So much of the characters in the book that we see, I actually don't think we see many characters that are like highborn. I mean, the marshals are like, they're the masks, though. They're the soldiers.
Yeah.
They're from the upper echelons or whatever.
I think it's like done by aptitude, but a lot of the ones we see are like noble, though.
And it's so like low, all the characters that like, we don't even see the emperor. We hear about him a lot, mm-hmm. but like, we don't even see that guy. We don't even see all the people who are like in charge of things except the augurs.
Yeah.
But like all the people who are supposedly like royalty or whatever, I don't know what they do. I don't know what they do all day.
I mean, they're nobles.
They're just riding towards the city of Sarah, and that's like the impending threat the entire book.
Yep. Besides, you know, all the other horrible things that happened. But mm-hmm. just quickly going back to Zach right now, I haven't read the second book. You guys have. But what I'm really hoping is that due to Zach's, I guess, absence, I want kind of Avatar the Last Airbender style, an Azula breakdown from Marcus, where he's just like, because when Azula loses her two friends, that's just her like mm-hmm. tether to this world is gone. So I really hope that in the second book, when I get to it, I just see this wonderful destruction of just mental capacity from Marcus. Oh my God, I'm a terrible person.
I guess we shouldn't say anything, but I feel like the stuff I'm trying to say about Zach makes more sense in the second book too.
Marcus is just ripe for a meltdown.
Yeah. I mean, his character changes, goes through some changes.
Is it like a haircut in front of a mirror when he sees his mom and she's like, I never loved you as much as I loved Zuko. Am I crossing some stuff a little bit? Okay.
No, it's just his time to change, I guess.
Okay. Well,
I don't know why I phrased it that way.
It's okay.
I don't have a nice transition.
It's cool. Go for it.
I don't have a nice transition to this next thing, but I would like to talk about some of the teen tropes that show up in this book.
Aww,
specifically, smelling. Because this is something that I think, I mean, we know that Audrey is really in tune with smelling since she can remember how everyone smells.
I don't, it's because she uses the same two smells for each person every single time.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I'm wondering if this is, in the book, there's lines such as, my skin thrills at the familiar scent of him, which is a whole thing that we can unpack that entire sentence if we want to. What does it mean when your skin thrills? Is that something you should see the doctor about? Is there a rash growing? What is happening? We don't know. But I think this is a trope that comes from ultimately Twilight. Does anyone know of like people discussing scents before Twilight?
I feel like it would be dangerous to say it started with Twilight only because I don't remember a ton of stuff that I read before Twilight for teen stuff. Like, just because Twilight was like around when I was 14 or something. So like I could say at the beginning of, since the dawn of my history with teen books, yes, that's the first time I noticed it. But I don't actually know.
But I mean, we read older books too.
Yeah.
Like we don't like, I started in 2014. Like it's not like we read like
then.
Tamara Pierce and all of that stuff beforehand. And they don't discuss scent. Or at least not in those words.
Yeah.
I don't know if I noticed it before Twilight. Maybe because Twilight did so damn much.
Yeah. I think it's more started with Twilight because it was the whole, like, he's a vampire, so he has, like, elevated senses and can, like, smell more.
Bella, your scent is intoxicating.
I'm sorry.
Do not want.
But I will say, and I think I only noticed it because we've been talking about it because of the podcast, but so I'm reading Stephen King's Dark Tower series, and there was a part where they talked about someone's scent, but it was like partially because they had just been riding a horse all day.
See, there's stuff like that.
That makes sense because like, yeah, you would smell.
I mean, yeah, there are times in books where like people are like, he smelled like this because they were doing this. But like, it's not like this weird.
There was an attraction element to it, but like, it wasn't the like weird, like she smelled like hickory and just.
That's the
dry
thing.
Dry fire.
There's
I don't
a
know.
Formula for it. It's always a spice and some kind of nature thing, like weather. So there's one part where they describe Elias as cloves and rain. That's a smell. And then Keegan's cedar and something else. So he could be like,
and then
smelled like grass and nutmeg. Smelled like paprika and dirt seeds.
And the commandant is like, dirt seeds?
Just
dirt
seeds.
Okay.
Dirt seeds.
Dandelions and oregano.
Exactly. And like the commandant has a smell of snow, and she apparently smells as much as like someone who bathes an axe because you can smell her coming from behind
when you're alive.
I don't.
That's what I want to know.
Like the commandant. Essentially, if you can walk into a Bath and Body Works and pick up a candle, it's going to be one of
like
the characters.
Candy vomit.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be one of the characters in this book.
Yeah.
But. That
makes me feel like it'd be a bad smelling place to live.
I don't know, but
maybe
everyone
they just
smells
don't
like something.
Bathe that often in this society, so it's like a legit thing.
It's a school full of teenage boys, so I bet it smells pretty bad.
Wait,
yeah.
But if they all smell this strongly, now I'm picturing like Keenan like emerging from like a hamster nest of cedar shavings every morning, just like I'm ready to start the resistance.
The mystery is solved. He sleeps in cedar.
He's like
sleeps in those
down.
Cedar like guinea pig chips.
Like the scene when like Leia comes into Elias's room, there's just like a water bottle hanging with like a steel ball that he like laps at it and comes out and he just like beds down in the corner.
That's pretty much how they store them.
You're free to run on my wheel if you wish. You're not a prisoner here.
Yeah, I don't know why, but here we are.
Here we are.
Wise words of wisdom from Audrey.
But yeah, so I guess smelling aside or scent aside, were there any, like, besides, we briefly touched upon, like, everyone has to be attractive, but are there any other teen tropes that you guys, that just, like, jumped out at you guys?
I mean, the love triangle was definitely one. I think that's also bigger after Twilight.
Which love triangle?
Right? There were a couple.
The double love triangle, the best friends falling in love. Like, from the beginning, it was obvious. They were like, oh, they're best friends, and they're just, like, right away.
In
cool.
love.
Yes.
Yeah. So we had the best friends falling in love. We had the resistance fighter, renegade mask, and Leia. So that's another one that we had going on.
We did have the trope of her being like the princess, basically, and the best way that she can be. Like, she's like the daughter of the most important resistance leader. She can just be like a confused slave girl whose brother happened to be important, which totally would have worked.
Yeah.
Yeah. They
could have made it work with that, but nope. She's also the daughter of the lioness, who was like apparently a bitch, but I would love to know more about her.
Yeah.
A lot of people had mixed opinions on that woman.
Yeah, they go into more into her parents' background.
Her dad sounds like a sweet, absent-minded professor type.
I just really want to know more about like the lioness in conjunction with the cook, because like the cook is this like horribly scarred slave woman that hates the lioness with like all of her body.
I wonder if they're related. I wondered that the second time I read her
that
yelling.
Too.
Maybe she's like Laia's grandma or something.
I know,
Laia's badass grandma, but she's so carved up.
But
you can't
tell. Like, but she's like blonde. I think so. I don't think so.
I also think that there's some sort of like magic stuff going on because she can't.
Yeah.
She like physically can't talk about it. Like she hits a certain point where she just starts sputtering.
She stutters. That's
I
a
knew
good
she
thought.
Had a stutter, but I thought it was more like psychological, like so much trauma associated with this. But that's interesting that it might be like a magical bar somehow that she can't.
Yeah,
say.
That's a really good idea.
Because the magic in this book, the magic in this book is really like. Low key. It's in there.
Besides the magical albino posse.
Well, but it's even like nobody's like throwing laser beams from their hands or like causing the weather to change. It's very like low key magic and like magical creatures. And it's building slowly. And I'm kind of wondering if the war that they're talking about, because they're alluding the entire time to this big war, which you assume is like the Empire, but maybe it's like with all the djinn and shit they're trying.
Yeah.
Well, you look like you have something desperately to say.
Well, I'm just thinking like the looming war that's coming up. It's once again from the magical albino posse coming up and going, you are an ember in the ashes to multiple characters.
Right.
Yeah. They're actually the ones who say both book titles. They're just prophesying the shit out of everything.
They
seem like they would annoy the crap out of me.
What if this book was actually written by a magical albino?
No, I can't handle that.
And so, and I reject that here, thought. She just received these in the mail.
Yeah. Just like little manuscripts and just like, oh, all right.
Sure. I mean, I could use some money.
Best way to write a book, I'm going to be honest.
That's how I would do it.
I had that blatant plagiarism.
Blatant plagiarism.
No, it's not plagiarism. It's like there's a post-it on top that says, like, we need you to publish this. And okay. Then
she's a prophet.
Kind of, yeah.
Go spread the word.
Fun fact, this is actually how Harry Potter was released. It should be in the nonfiction section. This is something I've been advocating for.
Your deadpan face is good, but I think this is nonsense.
No.
Is this
real? No. Think about it, okay? Harry was born in 1980. The books start in 1991. The first book comes out in 97, almost immediately after the war is over in the timeline of the books. Coincidence? Or is it just, you know, J.K. Rowling has been told that she needs to release
planning.
These? This is the best conspiracy theory I've ever heard.
No, Hollow Moon is still the best conspiracy theory. Whobuiltthemoon.com.
I mean, I like this idea, but it reawakens the deep rage and anger I felt at the age of 11 when I didn't get a fucking owl.
First of all, we wouldn't get owls because Ilvermorny probably does something different. But let's
I want my magic school invitation.
Okay, I'm gonna backpedal out of this discussion of Harry Potter and let's go back into the teen tropes, I guess, of everything or just anything in this book we can do.
The transition.
Yeah, transition and we can transition to Nicole and Audrey's rape chat.
Oh god, yep. Said that right out loud.
Just say
use
that fun.
I
name
feel like Audrey went into it
with
a little bit earlier.
Yeah, a little bit. Well, I think the other thing I really wanted to talk about was how impressed I was, sort of, or like how I liked that, like, so this is obviously a really brutal world. Yeah, I know that was maybe
she's
not the right word.
Yeah, impressed was not the best choice of words.
But I don't know where you're going with it yet, so I can't tell if it was a bad choice. It sounds fine, but I don't know what you're saying.
Okay, well, it's a really brutal world, and I was like, I liked how much she was willing to go there, like to show violence. So like Laia's grandparents get killed in front of her, like in mm-hmm. the first like three chapters or something, and it's like kind of shocking and really like, oh, this is like a real thing, and it drives home kind of how much this society is based on violence, or the martial society is based on like violence and oppression. So it like kind of sells the rest of the plot really well, and I know there's a lot of like close calls with rape that we can get into. But I also think that in the grand scheme of things, it could have been a lot more, like, violent. Like, I've been thinking about this, and they talk a lot about how, like, all the slaves in Blackcliff, like, always get raped all the time. It's, like, totally cool with people. But, like, Izzy and Laia, as far as we know, never get raped at all.
They are the Commandant's slaves. And I do think that protects them a tiny bit because they're just busy running around doing her stuff.
But it's really clear she doesn't give a shit.
The one time, though, that she did find it, she wanted them left alone specifically just because, like, it's inconvenient for her if they're all fucked up. And I have a feeling that, like, after being raped, most of them are probably not in great shape. I don't think the Commandant would be cool with.
Well, yeah, I mean, Leia at one point is, almost raped by Marcus, and he beats the fucking shit out of her.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, I feel like a lot of these people, once people are raped, it sounds like a lot of them die. Like, magic ultimately is what saved her.
Yeah, it sounds like they're disposable. Like, maybe they're
just dead.
There's no end to it. Yeah. Maybe that's
the poor janitor. God damn it. Another rape. Can they just do it in my day off?
Yeah, I just don't think that she cares that much. Because, like, when Laia almost dies, she's like, whatever. It's cool. Like, it doesn't bother her that she's maybe will have to get a new slave.
It's like, ah, there's another 200 schmeckles down the drain. I don't know what the money is.
But there's just probably so many people. They're just like, yeah, just pick any person who looks like a scholar and bring him in here. Who cares?
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
And I'm sure sometimes it's like, I'm sure she'd go down to children if she had to. She wouldn't give a crap.
Oh, yeah, she doesn't care.
Like, Izzy was a child, and then she was like, hey, the cook did something to annoy me, so I'm going to remove your eye.
I still haven't quite figured out how they're related, only in that I know that cook's not her mother, even though it was speculated, and that they've been together a long time, so maybe that's why their relationship's so close, but like, there's a part where Lia's like, they tilt their head the same way, and they kind of are both blonde. I wonder if they're related.
I think they're related. But
and then maybe she might be related to Lia. Maybe Izzy is Lia's.
Oh my god,
sister.
What if she's
conspiracy theory.
What if she's Kenan's long-lost sister?
He's a redhead, though.
Yeah, but redheads and blondes are, like, very intermixed a lot.
That's true.
Have you seen Ireland?
That's true.
Have you seen Ireland?
the entire nation.
Oh, yeah, I have seen Ireland.
I'm just going to answer it directly. Yes, I have seen Ireland.
So I think that she did the violence well in that she, like, showed enough that you got the point that the world was, like, very brutal. And, like, the threat of violence is, like, a very real thing. But she didn't go, like, too far and, like, gratuitously, like, rape all the characters.
Yes.
Which was nice. I mean, there's close calls, but, like, no one actually gets raped.
It
so that's
was
a thing.
A nice even layer of terribleness without like going too. It didn't feel gratuitous is the good word for it. It didn't feel like she was like, you know what, I had a bad day. Somebody kicked my dog. I am just going to go crazy.
Yeah,
like Suzanne Collins at the end of the Hunger
Games. I think someone actually compared
or Clockwork Orange, which fun fact was my favorite book when I was Leia's age. So you know, I'm not going to end up in a Lifetime movie, right, guys? Right.
I'm sure you'll be just fine.
You'll be great. You're an adult.
Everyone's going to be
you
okay.
Made it.
Yeah. And I'm surprisingly with a really nice man. So, you know.
There you go.
I somehow made great decisions. So it just goes to show.
Worked out fine. Someone compared her to George R.R. Martin, though. And I was like, oh, not that far. Because, like, I don't think that Laia or Elias are, like, ever going to actually get killed.
Nah.
Or, like, in the way that, like, actually ends them being present in the book.
This doesn't feel like the kind of book that if they got killed, it would definitely have to be for like a solid reason that's tied fully into the plot. Like, I would probably be okay with it. It wouldn't feel as arbitrary as it sometimes does. But I don't think they would do that in this book.
I don't think
you're
they would
right. It doesn't feel like the kind of book where the main characters will die. Maybe just because they spend so much time switching back and forth between their different characters.
Yeah. From the character's point of view, it seems weird that they would.
Invest a lot of time in these characters, man.
Yeah,
I feel like they've all got destinies. Maybe that's why. This feels like a book that's all about destiny.
That's true. Well, the whole, like, an ember in the ashes.
Was it too corny, Cabby?
No, I know. I'm just thinking, like, I thought exactly like Audrey said, the ember in the ashes. And I'm just like, those magical albinos did such a shit job that everything is ashes. Like, think about that. Like, they have the ability to control everything. And it's like, destiny is just a pile of ash.
They're doing it the hardest way possible.
Yeah.
They're just like, this is the end result. How much can we fuck up between here and there? We know where we have to get to, but, like, how many things can we crash our metaphorical car into on the way to that destination?
Okay, I don't know if it's spoilers, but this is my theory, because, once again, I only read the first book, but I'm wondering... They kind of mentioned that, like, this all happened because the djinn get trapped in this tree or something.
Grove of trees.
I didn't know they mentioned that in the first book.
Yeah,
is a big part of the second
book. Grove of trees. And I'm pretty sure, aren't the augurs the scholars who originally trapped them? I'm getting that feeling because, like, where else did they get these fucking magical powers from?
I kind of wonder that. But then they're, like, obviously helping. They're, like, they, like, help the emperor.
They
guide him and stuff.
Yeah, but only to get to the point, because they have all this all-powerful knowledge. Maybe they know that these are the two people who can free the people from the groves. I don't know.
Emperor. Then they kicked him out. So I think that the augurs want a tool. They wanted... So the fourth challenge was, like, Marcus. They were supposed to kill Laia. And so, like, Marcus does. Or, like, he doesn't actually kill her. They, like, fake him out. But, like,
the albino save her.
Yeah, the albino save her. But, like, Marcus does without hesitation. So that trial was all about Elias and whether or not he would do what the augurs told him to do.
I can't tell how much of that is the Nightbringer, too, because the Nightbringer's got
a lot.
He's got puppets in this, and I can't tell because he was saying that he needs to be able to control Marcus. So I don't know how he's managing to control anybody or being
charged.
Yeah,
so I don't think the augurs are, like, under his control.
He's pulling his own strings.
See, I'm seeing it as a bigger game than that. I saw it as they knew exactly what's going to happen. That's why they laid on top of Leia and were like, act like you're dead, stuff like that. But, like, and they knew that Elias was going to do that from the beginning. Like, if you do this properly, you'll be free in both body and soul or whatever. That's what they said to him. So I see it as they know that he's going to get out. They know that they're going to do all this stuff and, like, help the resistance. And I don't even know what they're going to do, but essentially build this faction against this crazy emperor, because they have Marcus. They made him kill his brother. They did all this stuff to lead to an unstable emperor. So I feel like they're setting in motion this whole thing, because they don't care how many people die before the thing is righted, as long as the wrong is righted. Like, they're like these weird kind of creepy aloof people, but this is what I'm seeing it as, like, this overall, they're seeing the big game.
Yeah,
like,
definitely.
We're only seeing the first few, like, chess moves ahead.
They definitely act like gods or like deities, and that they're, like, moving the bigger pieces and not really concerned about who they're crushing while they do it.
Yeah, definitely. And I think they have their own end game. It's just, like, not clear yet. Even from reading the second book, it's not clear.
I think it's to release the things from the Grove of Trees, but I don't know what happens in the second book, so we'll never know. Because I feel like it's, like, weird enough that there's, like, only one girl creepy albino that, like, since there were these,
maybe there are more than one.
They specifically mentioned multiple times that there's only the one girl.
There's the running theme of just the one girl in this book. I'm not sure what that's about.
Yeah,
they're just like putting ladies by themselves a lot because this world doesn't already suck enough for ladies. They're like that one,
just the one.
That girl. I don't like her face. Let's put her in Blacklist.
That's how they chose the student.
That's definitely
No, I don't want him. It's
life's
let's
not
just
hard
put
enough for
away.
Ladies. Let's take that one and make it extra hard for her. But I did like the emphasis that the story had on storytelling while we're talking about that and like how the backstories of the augurs and stuff. There was a lot of emphasis on storytelling in the way the story was told. And then within the story itself, Elias talks about it a lot. And I'm sure when we actually have to talk about her a lot, I'm going to fuck this up. Mamie Rila, going to just say his mother.
Yeah.
From the tribe. She was a storyteller, and like Laia talks a lot about storytelling. So it's like a big thing. And the djinn were all stories.
Yeah,
and
so the knowledge from the stories.
So
sorry,
it's like,
cut you off.
No, it's okay. The power of stories is basically what I'm going for.
Yeah. Deep metaphor.
You're doing
I love
the Mormons.
This. I'm enjoying what you're saying. Continue.
I've now lost my train of thought. What were you going to say?
I was just going to say that, like, the fact that the knowledge from the stories that were, like, supposed to be legends with the djinn then became useful when the djinn started coming back and it turned out to be real.
Yeah.
So it's all, like, connecting.
So they're taking the information. So it's not just the stories are coming to attack them, but they're also saving. Oh.
Yeah. The stories
deep.
Are actually, like,
got so
the
deep, I surprised myself.
The look on her face. Just
I was like, whoa, it's all connected.
Her pupils enlarged. She just kind of looked off into the distance momentarily and just found herself
right.
and inner knowledge. It was great. Yeah. Anyone?
So
that was a triumphant moment for
that
me.
That was a triumphant moment. So I think it's probably about time to wander over to Kathy's
smut corner. This feels like a good moment for that.
Yeah. So
I feel like I might have some things to contribute to that. Who knows?
But yeah. So Kathy's smut corner. This is going to be kind of an ongoing, repeating
feature.
Unavoidable.
Yeah, feature
it was never not going to be.
Yeah. Because it all started because I was reading a book as yet to be named that. Was kind of the impetus for me texting these people who apparently were just ready to go with a podcast.
On top of life, I think you mean?
Yeah. I was like, we should write a podcast about this simply because I wanted to do Kathy's Smut Corner. And now I'm going to say that for me, my preference in teen books are things where it's just kind of like, when I was a teenager, I accidentally read a few books that were far too advanced for me. And those were great experiences.
I feel like we must have had similar experiences.
Right? And my favorite part, I had this memory. I was in eighth grade sitting in class and I noticed that another girl is reading a book under the desk in my health class. And it was a book that I had read like a year and a half previous where I was like, oh, this is full descriptive sex. And it was in the teen section back when the teen section was only like one single turnstile book thing at
my
school.
Oh my God, I remember those days.
And I just remember sitting there and being like,
literally like, doing the creepy toad laugh.
Just like, I know what's coming for you, Courtney. I know what's going to happen.
You're going to be so surprised. It's going to just ruin you.
And I'm like, I really hope it happens during class because that'll give you some great feelings.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I used to read books out of my purse because in middle school I started reading romance novels and I was like, no one's going to like let me read this book with the guy's shirt half ripped off. So I would put them into my denim purse and I became that girl who reads out of her purse. That was just like my thing for a full 2 years.
No, you weren't the girl that reads out of her purse. You were the girl who reads romance novels in school because every school had one. And I remember mine was named Alex. She was very nice, but she wouldn't read it in her purse. She'd just read them openly, and I'd be
That's
like,
the thing.
Huh.
No, I don't think anyone knew that I read them. I did get a lot of books that were not that bad banned from school, though, because they had dumb names. And I also opened a library out of my middle school locker once. I was pretty pleased about that.
Amazing.
So I have a whole history of banned books from my middle school was also very strict. So
renegade. Anyway.
I tried to be a renegade with a name tag on and a collared button down.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, so I guess since I was going to say the smut corner in this one is not that smutty, which kind of disappoints me. And I hope that
there's a lot of sexual tension.
There's a lot of
tension. And in the beginning of the second book, there's a lot of sexual tension.
Are we sure it's sexual tension because her skin thrills at the scent of him?
I think
it definitely
it's supposed
is.
To be.
It's pretty overt at the end there. And there's
I
a bit
know.
Where they make out in his room, that one bit at the end.
The book that inspired me to have Kathy's smut corner, the sexual tension caused her to forcibly drop a cookie from her hand.
There are some good ones.
This doesn't happen
to be one, which is disappointing.
The tackier it is, the more better. I'm loving it. So just like that's if you want to like get your mental space for where I am, like that's where I'm at. So I'm just going to say.
So this was like a sexual tension book.
It was too well written to be trashy the way we needed it to be,
not
I think.
Trashy.
It was a very good, well written book.
It's great because the,
it was
the
a
moment.
Great book,
and that's,
yeah,
and that's nice,
this.
But not enough dicks.
But yeah, the moment where the smut Okay, actually, I'm going to backtrack because you just said not enough dicks.
Yes, let's always backtrack.
I kind of want it to be like left a little obscure in that sense because I have yet to read a good description of a dick in a book.
I don't think it exists. I don't think they look that good. I think there's no way.
Yeah, I don't think there's a way.
Well, we don't want
to
body shame here, but like someone just
sure. There's not a way to make them sound nice.
Everyone's beautiful.
Wait, Velvet. Wait, please. Velvet.
This is what. Okay. Same author as the cookie dropping book, Velvet Encased Steel.
And I was that's just used in every romance novel.
Right?
People, apparently, that's like they really want to emphasize. I don't know what that is. But
there's
velvet.
Soft,
it's the only thing velvet's used
hard?
For anymore. It's the only place I ever
it's
hear
the
velvet.
Only thing.
That's the only thing I hear velvet mentioned.
That
I've never
Pinterest.
Heard velvet mentioned. Then Pinterest for velvet leggings, which are like a thing that came
oh,
back
really?
For a second. Yeah. No. So impractical.
No.
Velvet sofas. Oh, all over Pinterest.
So impractical.
But yeah, yeah.
Can't you crush velvet?
Velvet anything is so impractical.
Nope. All right, and this is unrelated to
yeah,
velvet covered.
Let's talk
penises.
About fabric.
Kathy. I like to imagine that Kathy's smut corner is just entirely velvet.
I feel like it would be the kind of room that's like not only carpeted on the walls, but like the ceiling
yeah, like,
carpeted, the floor is like extra
like,
plush.
The lamp has like fringe needlessly.
Yeah, and it's everything's way down low.
It's like the room from the dream in Twin Peaks, sort of.
With the backwards talking
yes,
person,
but
okay.
Without the creepy people, just okay. Like those furnishings. No, nope.
I'm picturing like more lavish and
more
lush.
Lavish,
like something
okay.
From like Phryne Fisher's house, but like extra velvety.
Okay, yeah, it
extra
would have to be,
velvety,
like, even more because her house is very tasteful.
Yeah, but I want a
tasteless
tacky.
Velvet.
Yeah,
I was like, this
like,
room is
yeah.
Not gonna be tasteful.
I am a tasteless person, so yeah, let's just fine. Like keep that in mind.
It's fine. We're all garbage people.
Oh
yeah,
wait,
that's
right. We're having a dramatic.
Oh yeah, no. Oh, I wasn't gonna do a dramatic reading because I don't think people want to
yeah,
listen
but
to that. But
normal
I just,
reading.
I'm just gonna like give
okay.
A quick.
You're good at like sultry readings.
Am I?
Yes. Even when you're not trying, sometimes.
I mean, that's funny because I did have this brief thing. Audrey was been there where
yeah.
I would read out loud sections from romance novels
yeah.
And stuff, and it's
only the smutty parts.
Yeah, I'd also do it at the back of Cosmo at the end when they have like the quick excerpt. I did that in undergrad in my dorm room.
It's a gift. It's a talent.
It's
my
great.
Friends used to read menus sexy. They like doing that. They would go to restaurants and just. It's really funny. It's just like blueberry pancakes with. Waffles
like,
and syrup,
like
et God cetera.
Booth from
just like especially hipster menus are great.
Yes,
okay.
Especially hipster menus where they're like foie gras with a light mint leaf stuffed inside an olive shaped like a tree. Like reading those sexy is always great because you're like, not only is this ridiculous, it's like just multiple levels of ridiculous. The food's ridiculous, and the voice we're applying to the food is ridiculous.
That's fair.
Made from a pig that has spent 2 years at Carnegie Mellon.
That's right, and was hugged every day of his life.
So great, but. Yeah, so I guess I'm just going to give a quick review on the smut corner, and it's really only a page long. It's page 371 if you want to jump to the good stuff.
70. The 370s were a good
time.
I feel
good
like I'm opening this notebook like it's going to have information yeah. In it.
But
it's
great because on a quick glance, I can see two instances of the use of italics, which you know is going to be
yeah.
Good. And a lot
process.
Of a lot of things are going on, but essentially it's just, do you guys want me to read this?
I mean, you don't have
pretty
to.
Ready for it.
Oh. You don't have
you're
to. You're ready for it?
Yes,
okay.
But I love reading from the book. I think we should always read from the book.
Okay, then I guess I'm gonna go for it. We can cut this out later.
Full-on dramatic
be.
Reading.
Yeah. Yep. I feel like I need to, like, get some water in my mouth before
Would
this.
You prefer it if I wasn't staring right at your face?
Oh, no, that, that helps
Does that
me.
Help? Okay, it just gives
okay.
You power.
Elias is here, before me, warm and beautiful and broken. He's a marshal. He's a mask. Sorry, I don't know how to do italics.
No, but that's the perfect, like, my yeah. Inner voice says no.
But not here.
But not my other inner voice.
Oh, God.
Yes.
My other inner... Oh, yeah.
The lower inner voice.
I have something to mention after this when we're all done. Okay.
Okay.
But not here. Not tonight in this room. Here, now, he is just
Audrey's
Elias. And I am just Leia. And we are both of us drowning.
In Leia. What?
No,
each other's eyes.
I look up. Okay, I'm just gonna end it there because I don't think it can get any better than me looking up and like Nicole had like the biggest Queen Elizabeth grin on her face of just like you know like that kind of like slightly manic I'm a royalty kind of thing going on. So we're just gonna leave it there. So that's where they are. They're drowning. They're having a great time, and then it goes into it and they kiss, and it ends with her lips burning, which once again I don't think
Seems
is great.
Unsafe.
Where have you been, guy? Yeah, part of me was like, what does that mask do to his face? Is it like dangerous? Are there chemicals on it?
That crossed my mind too, because like if you cover up all your skin and can't breathe, then you can die.
Yeah. So is he okay?
Are all these people okay?
There must be a
reason. They must be okay. Maybe that's why they kill other people. They just like
maybe they all go a little insane. Maybe that's part of why so many of them are dicks.
But he wasn't wearing his mask at that moment.
Yes, he did. He does take it off. Yeah, I don't think
if he likes spicy foods, that can cause lip burning.
Well, that's true.
I mean, he did just murder all of his friends, so maybe that's what it is.
So he probably went out afterwards for some pad thai.
But so that's great. So that was him trying to forget, was making out with this hot chick. But the other thing I have to say is,
and then they talk through the night, which was such a disappointment,
right?
I was like, oh, that's really cute, but are you serious? You're locked in. I was so ready when they were locked in the cell together.
I was like,
it's a little shady, but like, he's so nice that I'm not even gonna worry about it.
And then they were like, to get it on.
Yes,
Marvin Gaye's like sexual healing.
It literally was playing in the background, and they ignored it. It was like Sebastian singing "Kiss the Girl," and they were just like, nah.
Sexual healing, because he just like has all of his PTSD and like just
You guys would have felt
said
so
no.
much better, but no, they just said no, and it was the wrong choice.
Yeah, I was extremely disappointed. But we're just gonna say that happens in 371. Skip forward to the like early 400s, and then like the creepy albino mafia comes up, and one of them is like, "Let me get the exact quote here," because they're just like, "Okay, so she's chilling." The albino mafia comes up and goes, "Oh my God, your heart wants Keenan, and yet your body is a light when Elias Venturius is near." First of all,
but I don't want them talking about sex to me.
I don't want any 500-year-old creature talking about sex to me.
Just like translucent, gross skin. Can you imagine? Yeah, it's like just gross old man tongue.
And their necks.
Do they have sex? Do they like what? I don't even know.
They're
like,
immortal. They don't have to procreate.
Yeah, they don't need
to
procreate.
But at that point, I'm just like, her heart doesn't even want Keenan.
No.
Her mind wants her to want Keenan because she knows that that would be the logical choice of someone who's working with the resistance.
Yeah.
But her whole body's like, nah, I'm
also,
good.
They've described Elias. I'd pick him too.
Oh, yeah.
Well, someone described, was it Izzy or someone else? Or maybe it was Elias himself, where he's just like, oh, he's shorter than me. He's not as good.
Yes, that's right. He's smaller in height, therefore I could kill him. Therefore I have the higher ground.
I can totally kill him. This is fine. She should totally sleep with me. And I'm just like, whatever, man. I don't know. But yeah, that was Kathy's smut corner, that there wasn't enough smut in this book.
There wasn't enough smut. The beginning of the second book, I just want you to read the second book. Because the beginning of the second book, it doesn't really spoil anything, except you already knew that they're running from the place.
Yeah.
There's like a great like running action scene. And there's even, I was waiting for it, because it's just Elias and Lia trying to get out of the city. They're just running and they're jumping over shit. And then Elias is like, get down. And
do they tumble together? And then
they
like,
tumble together
a
lot. Ugh. Things are exploding around them. They end up pushed up against each other a million times. And there's even, I was waiting for it, and there was even a scene where she has to jump over a crevice into his arms. I was fucking waiting for it, and it totally happened. And then they have a brief moment of like weird lust where they're like, I know we're running for our lives, but ooh, you have funny bumps. Yay. So they were like super into each other. Yeah, no, it was like, he was like,
please,
her
please tell me that was
curves.
okay. I'm like, was she describing him?
There were no
funny bumps,
unusual bumps. They were all the normal bumps.
His neck bumps were just so alluring in the sounding song.
His lymph nodes were so swollen. No, but there was even like that wonderful cliched, like, I'll catch you. And like, it was that moment of, I was like, all right.
Yeah.
But yes, there was a lot of sexual tension with absolutely no follow through. So that was.
So I'm just excited for more smut because, you know, that's
just sloppy first have smut in it.
Oh my, okay. Yeah. So that's where we're going into next. So thank you for listening. And our next book is going to be Sloppy First by Megan McCafferty. And it is so good. So I will say there's a lot of tension. And I'm not sure there's so much smut so much, but it's like realistic take on like her describing all of her friend's smut that they're going through. And it's just essentially if you're talking to me and I got to describe like Audrey's smut.
What? follow up. No, I'm just kidding. More information, please.
Yeah, it's a Sloppy First by Megan McCafferty.
Definitely what you'd want on a podcast, right?
To hear about
Audrey's. Oh, I thought you meant the book. Oh, I'm sorry, Audrey's, I'm ruining it.
My life.
I have no idea.
We're not going to discuss Audrey's life.
No, I don't know if that's interesting.
Well. Anyway, so it's going to be the next book, and I'm really excited. It doesn't have a map in the front, so I might be disappointing everyone.
Yeah, this seems more like it looks from the book you gave me. It looks like it's more like high school.
Oh,
set in high school. Yeah.
Yeah, set in high school. She's like
our world.
Yeah. It's real life. Like they mentioned
real life.
They
it
mentioned
happened.
Yeah, they mentioned 9/11 in it. Like
holy
yeah.
Shit.
I mean it's not like a dramatic treatment of it, but it's like she's lives in New Jersey. It's a passing thing. She wants to attend Columbia, and her parents don't like the city. So 9/11 isn't going to convince them to let their daughter go there.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting.
But I think it's a great book just because I have done a terrible time suggesting it to people. But, I mean, it's
called Sloppy First, so I feel like it's not pelted.
Oh, it's so good. And it's a great series. I prefer the first and second book, but, like, and you can stop there and just be good. I think there's a total of five, and they're all pretty good.
There's so many series I do that with where I'm like, yeah, after the third book, I just, like, consider it done.
This is good.
Ender's Game. Anyway.
So, yeah, thanks for listening, everyone. If you want to hear us talk more about Sloppy First, tune in next time at an ambiguous point in the future to find out more about what we thought about that book that we all are going to read.
Haven't read yet.
Yep, except for Kathy, obviously.
Oh, my God. This book was my high school.